And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you. Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Hamm, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial your one with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you don't know,
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with the one, the only West Coast brethren, Anthony Slater. What's up, my friend? How are you?
I'm good.
Man, we have no Fred Katz again. Fred, we're starting to take it personal. Our East Coast brother, Knicks beat writer. You know, your team wins 9 games in a row, 11 out of 12. We're on here on this week's tampering, partly to talk about are the Knicks legitimate Eastern Conference contenders. But unfortunately, because Fred's number one priority is to actually cover the team, he's traveling. We miss Fred again. We'll get Fred next time, hopefully.
Maybe we'll do like a more Knicks deep dive next time we get Fred, hopefully next week.
100%. 100%. And he can give me a hard time for not putting Emmanuel Quickley on my top three for sixth man of the year. We can.
Who's your top three?
Oh, man. Don't put me on the spot. I had Brogdon on there. I had Norm Powell on there. Now, that has changed because the Clippers decided to go get one Russell Westbrook. So their dynamics are a little
also,
different.
Also, Norm Powell, during a game I was at in San Francisco, seems like he dislocated or, you know, subluxation, whatever the term is, of the
terrible
left shoulder.
Yeah,
I've seen him in a sling. I went to UCLA, Arizona, actually, when I was down in LA, and he was at the game in a sling.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the sling when they played the Kings the other night, too.
Okay.
That is a legitimate injury, and you have effectively helped me stall enough. The number three guy on my list, this was the debatable one that I actually feel pretty good about.
Are you seeing what's happening, Sam Amick?
What's that? What do you got?
I mean, there's another person in the chat.
Great timing. Fred Katz is joining from the airport.
I'm crashing from the airport. I just got off the plane 1 second ago.
You had
I'm not
no
letting
idea.
You guys talk about this Knicks winning streak without me getting word in.
Do you have any idea how great your timing was? We were just saying how much we missed you. We were saying that next week on the pod, we could do this now. This is, and by the way, for the listeners, we're going to start with Knicks. Obviously, we're going to get to the rest of the NBA, the John Morant saga, Steph Curry returning, you know, more handicapping the home stretch. But now, all things Knicks. Fred, I didn't have Emmanuel Quickley on my top three for six man, and I was, you know, ready for you to just kind of let me hear it about that. That young man is playing some ball. They beat Boston yesterday, double overtime, second time during this 9-game winning streak. One of many things going splendidly for your Knicks. What say you?
I mean, they're playing incredible basketball right now. You're right about Quickley. He's been on a whole other level. 38 points last night against Boston. And it's not just the scoring. I mean, you see the scoring go up with him. He's averaging like 17 a game the last 2.5 months or something. But he is, I mean, Mitchell Robinson, because he's a big man, because he anchors it, is probably their most important defender. But Quickley is just an invaluable defender. Like, I think he's going to be on all defense teams at some point in his career. He's just a spectacular team defender on the perimeter. He really directs their defense, plays with so much energy. I didn't go to Boston last night. I watched a game with my mother, and it was her first Knicks game of the season. And 2 minutes into the game.
Watch the game with your mother in person.
in person.
Nice. And, that's fantastic.
And she, and 2 minutes into the game, she says, "Who's that guy?" I was like, "It's Emmanuel Quickly." She said, he plays with so much energy. I was like, my mom knows nothing about basketball. And 2 minutes into the game, she could identify, like, that's the guy
Sure. Who
brings the energy to the Knicks. It's just very apparent, the pace that he brings, the energy that he brings. He's so important to them.
I was going to say, I got you real quick, Slater. Sorry to jump in again. I got you in serious basketball mode too quickly. Can you give us a little bit of the color? Because the people not watching on YouTube here, you know, Fred is being a loyal tampering co-host. Coming
yes.
to us from the airport, you know, it's clearly cold back east. You got that winter coat on. What is the context here of your travel schedule
today? I mean, the context is I just got off the plane 1 second ago. We got a nice escalator situation behind me. I'm not going down the escalator, quite honestly, because I just didn't think it would be good audio just hearing my bag drag on the grated metal. So instead, I'm standing next to it, and you can hear everybody else's bags drag there.
So I was just wanted to ask about Julius Randle, right? I mean, he's sure. been like, you know, maybe the best player in the league since the All-Star break. He's got like a 46-point game. He had that crazy game winner in Miami. His arc has been, the last three seasons has been like this wild roller coaster, right? Like, you know, the All-NBA breakout. Then last year, it felt like he was one of the most disappointing stories in the league. He was like kind of like beefing with the fan base a little bit too, right? And then he's back again this year to like all NBA form. Like what's happened with him in the last 3 years?
I would say it's a number of different things. So he made all NBA 2 years ago. He got on the second team. He won most improved player. And the way that he's succeeding this year is completely different from the way that he was a couple of years ago when he just dominated from the mid range. He shot a ridiculous percentage on jump shots, which I don't think anybody really considered to be that sustainable. He was over 40 from three. He was handling the ball a lot. The offense ran through him. And now things are very different. Last year, he really struggled being the focal point of the offense. Like, that wasn't for him. His biggest weakness offensively is his recognition of double teams when they come. We saw that late in the Boston game last night, too, where, you know, double teams come and he doesn't realize it and he turns it over. He gets off the ball late, that kind of stuff. And that's stuff the coaching staff is telling him all the time. With Jalen Brunson there, that's not as big of an issue. Now, all of a sudden, Brunson's setting him up. Ryan Rucco said in the broadcast last night, he has more points off spot-up jumpers than any other player in the league this year, which is extraordinary. And he's completely renovated his shot selection in the way that he operates. He's taking more threes than ever, like by far. And he's only shooting 34, 35% from three. But because he's taking so many threes, he's basically eliminated the bad long twos. And he gets to the rim a little bit more, and he gets in the paint a little bit more because some of those long twos are now short mid-range shots. Just because of the types of shots that he's taking, he's been his most efficient player since he came to New York. He's been great. He's playing at a different intensity. Defensively, he's playing at a different intensity. And you're right, since the All-Star break, I mean, that Miami game, like, it wasn't just the game winner. He had 43 in that game and was hitting everything. Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo played incredible defense on him. And he hit an unbelievable floater over Bam. He was just taking him one-on-one. Like, it was mismatches. And those guys are as good as it gets. He was just on fire. And he's been reading the game great, finding guys in the corners, passing out. He's playing at another level right now.
A couple numbers for you, gentlemen, because the 9-game winning streak, for obvious reasons, is in the spotlight. But 11 of 12 is the stretch, you know what I mean, where they have really turned it around. They were 28-26 on February 4th. During that stretch of 12 games, we mentioned Randle, 28.5 points, 8.5 boards, 4.2 assists, you know, 50% from the field, 40 from three, big time production, big time numbers. Jalen Brunson, almost 27 points a game, 6 assists, 4 boards. Quickly, what jumps out for me is almost 43% from long range on about 6.5 attempts a game. And by the way, Julius Randle, just to go back to him, and I don't have his entire career numbers in front of me, but my goodness, boys, 10.1 threes. I mean, you're talking, you know, since you're the Steph whisperer in the Bay there, Slater. I mean, that's up in Steph territory as far as volume, or at least in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was a very conscious decision, too. Like, that's something that the team has been pushing him on. Tom Thibodeau has been pushing him on. The coaching staff has been pushing him on. Like, they wanted him to redistribute his shot selection. Tibbs is always, for all the flack of Tibbs gets for being old school and that kind of stuff, like, he is always talking about what he refers to as the value of shots, which is he wants dunks, he wants layups, he wants threes. The Knicks have a really analytically friendly shot profile from that sect. And man, Randall is just, he's made a serious effort to take way more threes. That's
almost twice what he averaged in his All-Star season. So that's a hell of a transformation in a couple of years.
Hey, let's forget the X's and O's for a second. And like, what's the juice in the city? I mean, this is one of the most entertaining fan bases in the league, right? I still vividly remember that Hawks-Knicks series where they let fans back in MSG a couple years ago felt like the first big sporting event post-COVID, right? I remember it was like, wow, there's like people courtside. And that was such a fun environment, that really a fun season for them. Last year, it was the disappointment. What's the belief level locally? Just what's like the color locally right now?
Oh, I mean, you guys should see
my
group chat. You guys should see the group chat with my high school friends. It is, they are off their rockers. They're going to the ring fittings already, and they're ready to go. Like, I think it's possible. I mean, they have Charlotte at home on Tuesday. It's possible the environment for that game is going to be absolutely insane. Like, especially if, you know, the Knicks do what they're supposed to do against the Hornets and they get off to a nice run, because they're not just beating teams on this stretch. That's the thing. They're like, they annihilated the Hawks and they annihilated the Nets a couple of times. And they're really running up scores on teams. They're killing teams. I mean, they had a wire to wire win against Boston at home last week, and then they went in Boston again. And when they get those big leads, the MSG is just insane. I don't know. Do you guys? I think they can totally win a playoff series. I think they're definitely good enough.
First of all, Tuesday night sounds like a stage set for Kelly Oubre to break some hearts. And
I know it does seem like a letdown game, right? Like I said,
I can already see Kelly Oubre after a big three to give him 35. Doing his blowing the kiss to the crowd.
Number one. I wish you had a holding mic. You got the AirPods in today because you're at the airport. I wish you could just go grab guys on the street and women on the street and say, hey, what do you think about them Knicks? What about them Knicks?
If they knew who you were,
because we're writers, we're not as famous from a face standpoint, Fred. So, I mean, you know, you have not been asked to sign any autographs during this visit from the airport. But my goodness, if they knew who you were, they'd be jumping in on this conversation.
Man, I not famous. I couldn't even get into Knicks shoot around in the Heat arena on Friday. So
that's a tough arena to get into.
Oh, it is the tough arena. It is tougher. It's tougher than Fort Knox. It is easier to get into the
MSG's
Pentagon.
MSG's pretty bad.
Yeah. All right. We're going down a rabbit hole.
Miami is the roughest.
context of the East, Fred and Slater too. You know, they're right there with Cleveland right now. So in terms of contenders, you know, we know it's a Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, top three. And then, you know, and listen, the idea that they just took the Celtics out twice in this stretch is no small feat. Three times this season. I don't have it in front of me. It's been a very long time since they swept Boston. In terms of, you know, kind of differentiating fun little stretch versus actual identity of this team. And like you said, a team that can win a playoff series and maybe go even farther than that. What do we think?
I think they could win a playoff series. I think it would be a great series against Cleveland. Like, even beyond just the Donovan Mitchell revenge series against the team he never played for a narrative. I mean, that would obviously be really, really fun. And I'm sure there are some people, if not everyone, in that front office and in that organization who are going to be saying, oh, man, like, you can't lose to Donovan Mitchell in the first round. Like, it's going to matter to people in that organization what ends up happening there beyond just the basketball reasons why it would matter. But I actually think it would be a great series. The Knicks have beaten Cleveland 2 out of 3 times this year. They play again at the end of March, which could be really important for seeding with how close those two teams are right now. You know, I think the two guards in Cleveland who are so dynamic against Brunson would be really, really fun. You know, those two rim protectors in Cleveland who are so dynamic defensively, you know, would be amazing to see, you know, with the way the Knicks attack the rim, and that would be a great matchup. I think that would be a really, really fun basketball series. It does seem like that's the most likely one to happen. I don't really see either of those teams passing Philly. And with the way the Knicks are playing, Cavs are playing pretty well. I don't really see them dipping to six. There's a nice gap widening there. So it
sure
seems like that series is going to happen. I think at this point, I don't know. It's hard to say who would win. I think it might be a toss-up at this point for me. Like, the Knicks could win a series. I can't believe I'm saying it. The Knicks could totally
such a homer, Fred. Man, we count on you to be critical. And look at you. Become a homer.
Look, just kidding. They are. It's not, Sam. It's not just the hot streak. And you say it's not even just 11 of 12. And it's not even just 12 of 14. Since December 4th, they're 29 and 14. I mean, that's a 43 game sample. That's more than half the season where they're 29 and 14.
Like, why have they become so good? I mean, obviously Randall's playing well. We mentioned quickly Jalen Brunson's been the signing of the offseason, but like, what has gotten it to the point where noted New York cynic Fred Katz and the New York media believe they could actually win a playoff series?
Well, I chose December 4th, not because it's an arbitrary date, because it actually signifies something. That's the date that Tom Thibodeau shortened the rotation to 9 guys. No more Cam Reddish, no more Evan Fournier, no more Derrick Rose. Went to 9 guys on that date. They had a terrible loss to Dallas on December 3rd, where they gave up 40 points in the third quarter. Tim Hardaway Jr. and Luka Doncic outscored individually the Knicks in the third quarter of that game. And they just got blown. The doors got blown off of them at home in the third quarter against Dallas, and major changes came. They were 10 and 13 on that date, and they really turned it around. Part of it is the defense. They were 24th or 26th in points allowed per possession at that point, and the defense has really ratcheted up, in part because of the rotational changes. Quentin Grimes is so much better defensively than he was last year, I think, or he was pretty good. Emmanuel Quickly is just so improved, and he's been playing more minutes under these circumstances, and that's obviously huge. Mitchell Robinson has been so much better defensively as well. And the other part of it is like Julius Randle is playing out of his mind. You know, since November 29th, he's taken more threes than any other player in the Eastern Conference. It started right around then that he started chugging up all those threes. And Jalen Brunson, who just won player of the month in February in the Eastern Conference, is out of his mind too. He's averaging just short of 30 a game since January 4th. You know, you have two guys playing at a clear all-star level for 3 months or so. And, you know, a bunch of other bench guys stepping up at that level. The Josh Hart trade was great for them, too. Yeah, that's another one where he's just, they're 9-0 with Josh Hart. He's been a perfect fit for them. He came in, he closed his first game there. He just fits in with their identity. He's such a Gibbs player.
Why do you think it's different than a couple of years ago when, you know, they did what I think they were the 4 seed in that Hawks series, and it seemed like one of those years where it's like, all right, well, Thibodeau clearly maximized them in the regular season, and, you know, which is a criticism of him, I guess you could say, that like it doesn't translate as well to the playoffs when everybody's scouting and preparing and attacking the game like Thibodeau does in the regular season. Like, why is it different than that season?
Because they're so much more complete. Like, they're just – that team, that Hawks series, the narrative came around, okay, the Hawks swarmed Julius Randle. And Randle looked overwhelmed because he's not a lead facilitator. He's the guy who has been next to Jalen Brunson. That's where he can excel and be his best. And they swarmed Randle, and Randle struggled, and the offense really struggled, and they lost in 5 to Atlanta. And I think the narrative coming away from that series was, okay, the Knicks style, the way that they played, was not conducive to the playoffs, and it didn't work in the Hawks series. And Randle was too slow to adjust. Tibbs was too slow to adjust, and it didn't work stylistically. And that is partially true. But I don't believe that that's the main reason why their offense struggled so much against Atlanta, which was not an elite defense or anything like that that year. The reason their offense struggled so much against Atlanta was because they had a bad offense that year. Like, they were 24th in offensive efficiency. So when you go up against the playoffs, you're going to struggle even more. And I think that's what happens. The Knicks right now, I think, are fifth. They're fifth in points per possession. Like, they have the fifth best offense in the NBA right now. I mean, this is a totally different team. Now they don't do it in the way the Warriors do it. They don't look like the 2014 Spurs. They in Dallas are the two most isolation heavy teams in the NBA. But Brunson is amazing in isolation. He's one of the best point guards in the league now. Randle has been chucking him up, and they've really found a way to score without three-point shooting because they're just good at all the other things. You know, Mitchell, don't overlook Mitchell Robinson's offensive rebounding. Like, he and Steven Adams are two best offensive rebounders in the league, in my opinion, and it's so essential to their offense. Isaiah Hartenstein's offensive rebounding. I mean, they're really as good of an offensive rebounding team
they
as you're
going to get.
They
profile really well, man.
Of it too.
Like, yeah, fifth in offense, 14th in defense, and this is not even trying to go down the hot take road here, and I hadn't had this thought all season long, but, you know, if this continues, is Tom Thibodeau the guy who we all assume? I mean, listen, the arc of Tibbs' career is year three, everybody starts getting tired of his voice. That's what we are used to believing. To his credit, he's gone from being a guy that we were talking about around the league as possibly being in trouble, hot seat wise, to, you know, playing a big part in this turnaround and probably should be in on that coach of the year conversation.
I mean, they're very well coached. I don't think you can watch them and think of them as anything other than well coached. They play crazy hard. So I was having a conversation with Mitchell Robinson at his locker about a week ago. And there was a play in a game that they were in where against Boston at home, actually, last week. Where it's the fourth quarter, tight game. Mitchell Robinson blocks Malcolm Brogdon at the rim. And then he busts to the other side. And he's the first one down the court. Like, he doesn't just beat his man. He beats everyone down the court after getting a block. Quickly puts up a floater in transition. And Mitch has perfect positioning for offensive rebounding because he got down the floor so quickly. And he gets a tip-in. So I asked Mitch about that and I asked him why he was running so hard down the court and what his goals are when he's just busting ass in transition like that. And I thought he was going to say, oh, you know, you're trying to fill the lane and hopefully you get a, you know, wide open dunk out of it. I thought that's what he was going to say. And it wasn't what he said. He just immediately says transition threes. I said, what do you mean? He said, I got to draw the defense in and that way quickly or Grimes or Josh Hart or somebody else can get an open transition three because that's going to be the big thing. That's all I'm trying to do when I'm busting down the floor like that. It's like, man, that's not just like knowing your role. That's kind of like knowing your role is I set screens and I dive and I play defense and I block shots and I call the defensive signals and all that. That's like understanding the nuances of your role. That's really embracing your role in every single type of context. And I think they have that across the roster. And that's pretty, it's not unheard of, certainly. There are a lot of other teams like that, but it's more uncommon than not that you have a bunch of guys who just understand their roles to that degree, to the way that Mitchell Robinson was talking about, the way that Quickley does, the way Grimes does, the way Hart does, Brunson, even Randall, the way that he's adjusted next to Brunson so willingly. I think they have a bunch of guys who are just really embracing the way that they play. And look, that's on the coaching staff, right? Like that's, they have total buy-in right now.
Right, right, right. Good stuff, man. Listen, we were going to go deep on the Knicks without you. What a nice surprise.
Well, that's why I'm here.
I know. I appreciate you, brother. I will not forget this. Do you want to stay with us? Are you going to head home? What is your plan here?
I'm heading home. You guys okay. Do your thing. You guys talk about Ja or whatever you're going to talk about today.
Yeah, we got plenty more to come. All right, I think we need an ad break here. Yeah, let's have a break. All right, Fred, travel safe, brother. Appreciate you. Good stuff. On the other side of this break, I think we're going to tackle the Steph Curry return, Mr. Slater. We will get to Ja, but I feel like we are in a hoops state of mind, and that is an off-court situation in Memphis. That and much, much more on the other side of the break.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
All right, Slater, we are back. Let's keep it moving. Like I said, we're going to stay on the hoops front. We'll get to the Ja Morant saga in a few here. But you were at the Chase Center last evening. No, I'm sorry.
Crypto.com Arena yesterday. Afternoon.
Afternoon. Doubleheader. Clippers, Mavs, Lakers, Warriors. All kinds of hoops action going on at the Crypto.
Actual doubleheader in Crypto.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Absolutely.
Clippers Grizzlies the night game. Yes.
Oh, what did I say? Clippers.
I think Mavs.
I'm all over the place, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, Clippers Grizzlies. And we are going to talk about that too. All right. Steph Curry, though, had missed 11 games with a lower leg injury. Steph Curry is a pretty good ball player and a guy that the Warriors desperately need if they have even the slightest chance of defending their championship, you know, let alone getting into the playoffs, not by way of the play in. They kept their heads above water without him, played pretty well, roughly 500 basketball. And you know, end up dropping that game to the Lakers. But thoughts, observations, analysis, this is a big moment for them. And also any clarity on Mr. Wiggins, who has been out for some time with personal reasons as well.
Yeah. I'll start with the game. You know, Steph himself looked good. I mean, that's one of his kind of superpowers is the condition he keeps himself in. Right. I mean, and I'm not just talking during an injury, but if it's mid-August, if it's July, if it's day one of training camp, the guy's just always in like a pretty like peak physical shape. So he was able to play 30 plus minutes. You know, the shot, he missed two open threes in the first quarter. I think he had a scoreless first quarter, like played like 7-8 minutes. And you're like, you know, looking a little bit rusty, but shook it off right away, came back in for his second quarter stint, scored 8. He actually had 19 in the fourth. There was that sequence where Austin Reeves like kind of skied and blocked his shot. And of course, you know, the Lakers crowd was like, I wouldn't say taunting Steph, but you know, if Austin Reeves has a spike block, that really kind of gets the Lakers crowd going, particularly when it's on
Billy Kobe, man. They love that kid.
And then he, same possession because it was off Reeves out of bounds. Steph hits like a 29 footer with Reeves all over him, and kind of gives it back to the crowd a little bit. And it felt like one of his little, you know, he has had several injuries in his career, and he always kind of has those like I'm back type moments. The most famous one in Portland, it kind of felt like that because it was during this sequence where he got really hot, scored 19. They did not win. They were on a 5-game winning streak without him before he came back. But guess what?
Clearly,
was at
he's
home.
The problem. He is
well,
the problem.
The problem is their location, right? I mean, everybody knows
it's 7
this
wins
point.
On the year on the road.
7-24 on the road. That's just like basically the same record as the Pistons on the road. And then 27-7 at home, which is like the same record as the Milwaukee Bucks at home. So it's just it's difficult to even understand at times.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of the issues they're trying to solve. But I do think they're in a healthier place and they've been at a lot of points this season. I think a lot of the side pieces on the team kind of found a rhythm without Steph. And then you don't really worry too much about Steph getting back.
What about the Wiggins component?
Yeah, it's nearing 3 weeks that he'll be gone. It's kind of like shrouded in mystery, you would say. I mean, like the team is maintaining that like it's an excused absence that he's away. They're only saying family matter. Wiggins is, even prior to this situation, is a very private individual that tries to keep his personal life. So they're not delivering many details about it. And Bob Myers has even said this publicly, but are saying like they do expect him back. Like they don't think this is going to be a rest of the season type thing. But, you know, this is their second, third most important player, whatever you want to put him at. And he's basically missed 3 weeks. And not only that, I mean, the assumption is he's not playing basketball anywhere during this, like, you know, 3 week period. So he's going to need to recondition himself. He's going to need to rediscover a groove that he really hasn't had since he got hurt in December.
Right.
So, and the clock is kind of ticking, you know, that they seem like they're in stable position to make the playoffs, even if they don't get what they need out of him. But we saw what happened in the playoffs last season. They won the title because Wiggins just elevated his game to a level none of us even knew he had in him. You know, he's guarding Luka Doncic and Jason Tatum and, you know, doing his two-way Wiggins stuff in the playoffs. He's got to get back to that. And part of getting back to that is literally getting back to the team. And at this point, there's no clarity on when exactly that'll be.
Yeah. I mean, and their defense being such a problem all year long. I mean, he's a massive X factor if they do have a chance to contend. So we'll see what happens there. It would behoove them. You talk about that road record, man. They are currently, as we do the pod, 2 games behind the Phoenix Suns, who are in fourth. And so home court is within reach.
We mentioned the 4-5 of like possibility.
That's where I was going to go,
right? Knicks, Cavaliers. How about KD against the Warriors as a 4-5?
Well, I am loving the way that this stuff, although I admittedly I kind of hate that because this is a problem I've never had before. I joked with someone the other day. I said, man, I'm going to be sitting up here near Sacramento, potentially having to choose between, you know, some Kings playoff series, which is 15 minutes from my house, or, I mean, but if we got Warrior Suns happening down the road, I might need to come join y'all and watch that action.
Well, you know, what could help you if the Kings get home court and the Warriors don't, if they're the 5 side of that 4-5, the
fair.
First two games are in
fair,
Phoenix,
fair,
while
fair.
The first two games would be in Sacramento. So maybe the NBA will do you a scheduling favor and you can hit both series. Because, you know, I wouldn't mind hitting both series as well.
But it is an easy segue from there to, you know, making our way around the league. There's just a lot happening right now, man. There's a lot of fun teams. And you know, we wrote this roundtable the other day on the national side about load management. And it's so nice to have a little bit less load management right now. Guys are playing. Games are good. The action's, you know, pretty hot at the moment. So those Phoenix Suns, since Mr. Kevin Durant, excuse me, has come to town, are 3-0, and they take care of Dallas on Sunday afternoon in a game that I watched the tail end of last quarter. And first of all, I mean, the wild ways in which these Mavericks with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving can continue to find ways to lose close games is brutal. You know, in this one, Luka misses a late bunny that I believe would have tied the game. Not the kind of, you know, kind of miss that you see Luka ever have. He gets frustrated in the worst moment of the game for him. Devin Booker comes over and reportedly is basically telling the ref that Luka should have been called for a foul. Luka doesn't like that he's saying anything, tells him to shut the F up. They get in each other's faces. I mean, we got playoff level intensity long before the playoffs. But the Suns in general look, you know, as advertised so far. Certainly depth questions, maybe defensive questions. But the Kevin Durant, Devin Booker combo, and certainly to watch that and how well it's working within the context of his old buddy Kyrie Irving being on the Dallas side and struggling with his dynamic duo with Luka so far was poignant in a lot of different ways. And KD, man, like, he's going to unlock, I think, Devin, which is saying something. Devin was already unlocked all by himself. Devin, early this season before he got hurt, was putting up MVP caliber numbers. But I keep thinking about Slater, the years ago, that summertime viral video of Book when he got frustrated that he was getting double teamed and kind of infamously telling people in that run, like, it's, you know, we're not double teaming y'all, like, it's summer. And took a lot of flack for that. Well, guess what? Kevin Durant being on your team means Devin's not going to see a whole lot of doubles anymore. And that is a dangerous thing for the rest of the league. You know, what do you think of these guys so far?
I mean, it's Durant. It's like he's the reason that, like, immediately it's like, yeah, I can see the Suns winning the title.
Right.
I mean, this is – so these are Kevin Durant's three games with the Suns so far. 10 of 15 shooting, 7 of 10 shooting, 12 of 17 shooting.
Right.
It's not only the obviously extreme efficiency
it's almost
there,
70%.
But it's the lack of field goal attempts he needs to score 23, 20, 37 on set 12 of 17 yesterday. Because guess what? You look at Devin Booker's stat line. Devin Booker, 15 and 26, 12 of 24, 15 and 25 in those three games. You know, he's shooting
crazy.
8 more field goals per game right now than KD. And that's, right. You know, KD, he's so easy to fit in as a chess piece on the court. There's no team, there's no superstar, there's no player or type of team that you'd be like, it's not really, like, that's not a good team for Kevin Durant. No, he'll just come in and he's going to make everybody else better and elevate, you know, everything around him. I think Devin Booker was never profiled as a 1A on a title team. They almost won the title a couple of years ago, and he would have been the best player on a title team, but he's never fit that, right? To me, he's more of a 2 if you're a really, really good team, a real contender. So he bumps into, I think, a more comfortable role for him. The high volume 2 next to a guy, KD, who says, hey, you could take more shots than me. I'll probably score more points still because I'm going to hit every shot I take. But and then DeAndre Ayton, I think he's probably more comfortable accepting a role as like a 3 on this team, you would say, because it's easier for him to look at Kevin Durant and be like, yeah, that looks like a superstar, right? It's tough for him, I think, to grumble about like lack of maybe shot attempts or lack of, you know, fame that comes from this, because it's just like, look, Kevin Durant's Kevin Durant. And then Chris Paul's at the stage of his career where like he really should be kind of, you know, the 4th most important player on a team tops. And now he could be that. So I just think the addition just like puts everyone in their proper place for, you know, contention. And to be honest, I'd pick the Suns coming out of the West right now. And that's obviously dependent on health, which is a big question mark. But if they're healthy, that's just that top 4 and particularly that top 1-2 on that team, I think is better than everybody else's right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been given my little disclaimer that I don't handicap super teams until we see them, but we are now seeing them, and I'm closer to being in your camp in terms of them being the West favorites. Although, you know, it just feels disrespectful to not make sure you give Denver their flowers. They've been doing it all year long. Let me hit on a couple other West teams real quick, because things have been, you know, kind of very active in the wrong kind of ways for these squads. The Clippers pull that game out against the Grizzlies, but that's, of course, a Grizzlies team with no John Morant, no Dylan Brooks, no Steven Adams. Might have been missing other guys as well. And really, Memphis fell apart late. They were ahead for most of that game. That was the Clippers' first win in the last 6 tries. They lost their first 5 games with Russell Westbrook. I saw them when they came through Sacramento the other day. Fell to the Kings. Tight game. Paul George thought he got hit late on a shot that I think would have tied it, but, you know, just not playing good ball. And of course, lazy narrative or not, it's inescapable to have the discussion not begin with the new guy who came to town when they started losing games, because they had been winning prior to that time. What are you seeing when it comes to this? I mean, this Russ and the Clippers and Paul and Kawhi and that group trying to get things going.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it in that Warriors game that I was at, the way the Warriors defended them. I mean, they basically rearranged their game plan specifically to have Draymond sag off Westbrook. They put Draymond on Russ and had him sit in the paint. It was exaggerated. It obviously, you know, turned into like viral videos just from, I think people just, you know, like the comical component of it. But it was like, you know, strategically really mucked the game up for the Clippers offense. And, you know, they were not only were telling Draymond, hey, stay off him, but nobody rotate over. And it, you know, like that to me is like they bottled up the Clippers offense because of it. And I think in a playoff series, that is the type of scheme that they're going to face. And you know, it's,
you know what I thought of that I want to bounce off you and, you know, I want to make sure I don't try to pretend I'm a sports psychologist here, but Paul George pushed pretty hard for Russell Westbrook. That reporting is undisputed, and he's publicly done the same thing when they were talking about the Russ possibility. I just wonder if you're Paul George, and you did this Clippers thing with Kawhi Leonard, who is, by all accounts, the poster boy for load management, a guy who physically has struggled the last couple of years just to stay on the floor. You know, it feels a little bit to me like, you know, perhaps Paul reached the point where, you know, his sense was, listen, everybody, like, I'm not down on what we're doing here. I understand the reasons, but I've spent a lot of time playing out there without a co-star. And Russ, of course, is the guy that he was with most recently in Oklahoma City, a guy that he has been rocking with before and after that experience, and a guy that he speaks highly of, thinks highly of, is very close with. Excuse me. And it feels a little bit like, you know, Paul might have just wanted, like, you just got to give me that backup guy. I got to have another guy. And that might have been part of the mentality. And before you kind of give your two cents, the other context that got my attention here the other day was Paul visited with J.J. Redick on his fantastic Old Man and the Three podcast. And on that pod, talked about load management in the kind of way that you would not expect a Clippers star to talk about load management, which is to say, and I'm paraphrasing, that he basically said, you know, we don't practice. He's talking NBA-wide. We don't practice anymore. He doesn't think that's the best thing for players, that it essentially you get softer because you're not competing all the time. He talked about his Pacers days, his experience with Frank Vogel, and how it was you play hard on game day, you practice hard on practice day. And to hear that from Paul, and then just to kind of try to unpack it all, considering that it does run counter to what the perception of the Clippers ethos is interesting to me, and maybe might play a small part in explaining why he wanted Russ on this team.
Yeah, I mean, because Russ is going to bring it every day. That is the one thing. And Russ is highly respected by players league-wide for that, you know, exact thing. I mean, I don't know how many times I can remember back in my early days covering the Thunder, getting to the arena like 2.5 hours early, especially, you know, young reporter, like, going to get there really early today. And it's like Russell Westbrook is out there 2.5 hours, empty arena, like going through a very, you know, stringent routine. I mean, he's OCD about it. So he has a high level of like professional respect about the way he goes about his business. And yeah, maybe there's just a belief that, you know, he enters the fray and brings a level of seriousness and toughness to the situation. Now, the way his offensive game has fallen, I just think presents strategic trouble for them, as I was mentioning. It you know, kind of blocks Terrence Mann's spot in the starting lineup and maybe in the rotation at times. But the truth is, you know, if the Clippers do make the playoffs, and I still think they're in fine position in a West that, you know, yes, it's packed up, but also, like, you know, a lot of these teams are just going to keep losing because they've been losing all season. So I do think the Clippers will make the playoffs. And by the time they get to the playoffs, they'll have enough of a what Russell Westbrook sample to decide, I think, do you bring him off the bench? Do you have him in a small role? Is he still on the team? You know, it's a very low stakes contract they have him on, a minimum prorated deal that at any point, if it really went south, you could cut him. I'm not saying they're going to do that, but it's an option. So maybe by then, you know, they'll have found the correct role for him, and maybe he plays him. You know, they came back and beat the Grizzlies yesterday, and Paul George was awesome, had 42. Russell Westbrook had a real like power and one, and kind of screamed towards the baseline. Ballmer was over there going crazy.
Man, he has spit coming out his mouth. Yeah, he dropping a mother effer. That was something.
Yeah, it wasn't the most impressive win because obviously the Grizzlies didn't have half their team basically, and you know, they gave up what, like a 51-point third quarter?
Third, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know where it's going, but I do think you're right on your read of like why Paul George might have wanted him around.
So I'm bouncing around. Good analysis on the Clippers. Let's talk Mavs. They make sure I get this right here. Since Kyrie came to town and began playing with Luka, which would be February 11th, they have now lost 6 out of 8 games. That matchup with the Suns, and apologies for jumping games here. I should have just gone from Suns to Mavs, but that's all right. That matchup with the Suns was interesting because it was a mirror image to an extent of two teams with similar profiles, just one, I think, better than the other. You know, defense being a concern for both to a lesser degree with the Suns, and in a tight game all the way through, but then Phoenix finds a way to separate at the end. Like you said, Mr. Durant having a lot to do with that, a big mid-range shot on the left side to seal the game. But, man, the late-game stuff with Luka and Kyrie, and nothing like disastrous in this one like there had been in a couple of other games, but you do conceivably have two of the best closers in the game, two of the better closers. I mean, Kyrie at his peak is the closer, but just not coming together so far. I know it's relatively early, but, you know, this is what we talked about when the Mavs made this move with Brooklyn, was the pressure that came with having such a tight window because of Kyrie's free agency this summer. Like, you know, if you had to pick one team that made a big move at the deadline that really needed to get off to a good start to avoid the big picture conversation that might come with struggle, it was the Mavs. And then, you know, they've ended up really scuffling.
Yeah, but this is, again, where I just think the West standings are so forgiving, where, you know, they're 33-32. And I can remember seasons, you know, I remember covering the season for the Thunder where Durant breaks his foot and they win 48 games, but they're the 9 and don't get into the playoffs because, the 8 seed was like a 49-win team. Or I remember when the Grizzlies one year, the Marcus Gasol Grizzlies were 50-win 7 seed. That's just no longer required in the West where, you know, we mentioned the Clippers. Well, they're sitting there at the 8 right now. The Mavericks are at the 7. It's not like they're not good early signs with Westbrook or good early signs with Kyrie and Luka, but, you know, they're a 3-game winning streak from being out of the play-in. And to be honest, like, they're going to be judged, I assume, both Clippers and Mavericks, with the way the Jazz are basically tapping out of the season at this point, it seems. The Pelicans, you know, they just don't have anybody healthy right now, so they're probably falling off. The Lakers don't have LeBron. I don't think they're ready to surge. The Thunder are basically, you know, it sounds like taking it easy with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I don't expect the Blazers to rise. So at this point, I think the Clippers are making it in, and I think the Mavericks are making it in kind of by default. So they're going to be judged once they get there. And even if they're in as the 8 or in as the 7, you're talking about an 8, you're playing a Nuggets team who, you know, I probably doubt more than others, as you tend to, remind me. But, you know, if you're the 7, are you playing the Grizzlies at 2 with everything that's going on about the Grizzlies? We might even talk about, do they fall? It's just, I think Kyrie and Luka have time, is what I'm saying. They have time to try to solve this. I don't like the supporting cast around them. But you would think that one of their advantages would be tight game late. We have closers that are better than your closers. We can hand it to Luka or hand it to Kyrie, and they can bring us over the finish line. And that just has not happened early on. We'll see if that changes.
Right. All right, good stuff. Let's keep in the West and finally tackle the toughest topic of the week. And in case folks are tempted to tune out because it's a non-basketball Ja Morant topic, we'll have a nugget at the end, or a blazer, if you will. That's the teaser. An interesting thing I want to throw at you about one Damian Lillard that we'll cap the podcast with. Listen, when it comes to Ja, just incredibly unfortunate situation, unnecessary. You know, everybody listening, I'm sure, has heard at this point, the Grizzlies play at Denver on Friday. Late that night, Ja jumps on Instagram Live and he's partying and he's in some sort of club atmosphere and flashes a gun on video while he's partying. And you see, you know, people in the background, music playing, this and that. And, you know, in a vacuum, it would have been an incredibly problematic thing to post. But this wasn't in a vacuum. This is a guy in Ja who had already been tied to a number of situations and with people accused him or people around him of flashing guns, threatening with guns. And specifically, you're talking last summer, you know, he's been sued by a young man, a 17-year-old, for being beat up at Ja's house on the outskirts of Memphis, pickup game at his house. And, you know, as the story goes in terms of the lawsuit, they get into it after a pickup game And, you know, the young man claims that he was punched 12 to 13 times by Ja. And in that interaction, again, timing wise, that's last summer. In that interaction, the lawsuit states that Ja had come out of the house, according to the kid, with a gun in his belt and flashed that, and that his father supposedly told him, you know, no, no, no. So that's number one. Accusations, unproven, but accusations nonetheless. Now, the, you know, the same summer, 4 days later, according to the Washington Post, an incident at a Memphis mall in which Ja's mother apparently had some sort of disagreement with an employee at a shoe store, and according to their reporting, had called Ja essentially for some help, and he shows up with quite a few people, gets into it with a security guard. No gun accusation in that situation, but the guard claimed that he was pushed in the head by one of his people. There were threats. Not good. Then you have, you know, the story that we broke from January 29th, when the Grizzlies and the Pacers had been having words all game long. Post game, Pacers employees, players, staff out by their bus, and John with, no pun intended, with people tied, you know, close to Ja by the loading dock while Ja was doing his media. He wasn't there early on in that situation, but they go, they're verbally sparring for about 20 minutes. Ja eventually comes out, according to what we were told in the reporting, gets in one of those SUVs that's near the team bus for the Pacers. And the Pacers folks claim that they had red lasers pointed at them that, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, terrified them. You had people who thought they were going to get shot. The league investigates, did not corroborate the presence of a gun. There's all that smoke, which the Grizzlies are known for in a much more playful way. This is not playful. All that smoke, and Ja decides, obviously in a moment where he's probably been, you know, he's just not clear-minded, he's partying, that he's going to flash an actual gun. And it creates an incredibly challenging situation for the Grizzlies, for the league. Thankfully, to this point, beyond the young man who says he got beat up at Ja's house, nobody's been hurt that I'm aware of. So the good news for me, and what I wrote the other day, is I know it's easy to sit on the sideline media-wise, and, you know, part of our job is to pontificate. I'm not trying to sit here and take any sort of, you know, kind of preachy tone at all. I'm just happy that nobody's been hurt, and I'm hoping that the spotlight can be a cleanser here and that Ja can finally realize what he has at stake and start moving differently. The league, I'm very curious to see what they decide to do. The Grizzlies, of course, you know, made a statement that Ja's away from the team for at least two games. Coach Taylor Jenkins said after they played the Clippers that it was unclear how long his absence would be. I was happy to hear the Grizzlies use the word accountability, because they have been incredibly protective, I think too much so to this point, with when it comes to his stuff. But yeah, this is not the kind of headlines the league or the Grizzlies or Ja and his family should want.
I was, you know, we mentioned earlier, it was a doubleheader at in LA yesterday, and I was leaving the Warriors game as fans were beginning to show up around the arena for the Grizzlies-Clippers game that was coming up. A lot of kids in Ja Morant jerseys. He's extremely popular, particularly among, like, you know, younger kids. To me, it's a little reminiscent to me of when I go on the road and see all the little Steph Curry jerseys everywhere. He's kind of coming up as one of the, you know, faces of the league, which, you know, you mentioned just the financials at stake for Ja Morant. I think for the league too. You know, I think the Grizzlies did the minimum here. They didn't even say the word suspension. It was like, you know, he's going to step away from the team for two games. There clearly seems to be some sort of, you know, right now, I think with the league and with the Grizzlies, and I'm sure with Ja and Ja's, you know, people, they're trying to just figure out, you know, the best PR way to reintegrate him, I would guess. And that, to me, I'm very curious about, you know, how long does he stay away? How do they bring him back? And the one thing, how does Ja Morant handle, does he sit in a press conference and answer a bunch of questions about this type of stuff? He's kind of shaded away from answering many questions about that. And he, you know, he put out a statement that took some level of accountability, but it was clearly kind of a manufactured statement, right? I want to see him, like, does he, like I said,
I mean, first of all, how long is he going to be out, right? Because things that we don't have clarity on, whose gun was it? Was that gun brought on a team plane, which is 100% against collective bargaining agreement rules? That's my understanding. You know, where were they? The circumstances matter, and the league's ruling from here matters. It's also, this might not be fair, but it is what it is. It's part of the context. you know, when it comes to NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, you know, he's been doing this job long enough now that we have continually run into situations that are sensitive like this, where the people who either covered the league before Adam was commissioner or were just part of it or around it will very often say, oh man, if David was still commissioner, David Stern, like, you know, and David, of course, handled the Wizard situation with Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden 13 years ago, came down very hard there. You know, Gilbert basically lost that season. Now that was bringing guns into an NBA space. That was NBA property, NBA locker room. But if the gun, this gun that we saw in the video, was brought onto a team plane, which again, to be clear, I do not have clarity on at this point, then that should take this whole entire situation to another level. So I don't know when we're going to see Ja again. I don't know what the league's response is going to be. And who knows if this pod holds up throughout the course of the day, if there's a development that's coming in the next couple of hours. But I don't know. I mean, this is just a societal thing. Is like they absolutely cannot act as if this is not incredibly serious and important. And with where this country is at and the part that guns have played, and everything you just hit on, Slater, about children. And it's like, what are we doing? I mean, Ja is a dude who is so talented, you know, by all accounts, raised by a very good family. And, you know, that's where you start talking unfortunate, unnecessary. But the ramifications of the messaging from the league standpoint, if they come in soft on this, I think would be really, really unfortunate.
Yeah. A lot at stake, no doubt, including a Grizzly season that seemed so promising for a while. And I know that's like, you know, we're not trying to wrap too much hoops into this, but, you know, where does that their season go with the same day Brandon Clark? This is the same day Brandon Clark tore his Achilles and Dylan Brooks, you know, got dinged for a one-game suspension for his 16th technical. It was like kind of this confluence of events that made you really question, like, where is this going for the number two seed in the West?
Right, right. No doubt. All right, let's end on a lighter note, much, much, much lighter note. Our friend and former colleague at The Athletic, Bill Oram, is now a columnist for The Oregonian. And Bill talked to one Damian Lillard from the Portland Trailblazers over the weekend. And Dame said something pretty interesting that I want to get your opinion on, Slater, that it is his opinion that he has it in him to score 100 points at some point, to do what Will Chamberlain so famously did, and to do something that the Kobe Bryants of the world and all-time scoring champion LeBron James, a long list of other greats, have not been able to do, to score 100 points. Now, Dame obviously scored 71 recently against Houston, this against the Rockets. This was the, you know,
when
I assume
they have Houston again on the schedule.
But Bill and Dame, this is not just kind of a hot takey column. I don't think it's the idea that, like, they analyzed what Dame did that day and it was his basketball view, and he breaks down play by play, you know, shots that didn't fall. You know, like, I think it's cool because it's from in terms of him being a brilliant basketball mind, it was him painting a picture of, like, no, I can look at 71 and tell you how that could have been 100, or at least something close to it. But it, you know, more broadly speaking, that question I want to posit to you, Dame or anybody else, is there a human within today's association who has it in him to score 100 points, and is Dame that guy?
Well, the three-point volume has made it, like, more realistic.
Wilt didn't hit any threes, in case you wondered.
Shooting. Well, but even, like, you go 5 years ago, like, you know, even when Steph Curry was busting out, like, he's currently taking many more threes per game because everyone in the league is. We were earlier in the show talking about Julius Randle's chucking up, like, 10-plus a game. So the volume, I think, makes it, like I said, more realistic. But to me, for somebody to actually do it, it would have to be kind of shameless in a way of, like, let's say Lillard was even hotter in that game and you know, was in the 80-90 range. Well, that means the Blazers are up another 10, 20 points. You know, like, if somebody's scoring 100, their team is probably winning by, like, 30, 40, 50 points. A team like Houston that's, like, you know, they're down on their luck season. They have no hope of kind of jolting back. So,
by the way, as our super producer Andrew Schlecht shares, the Blazers have the Pistons tonight. So who knows? Maybe tonight's the night.
Trying to put that up as a candidate. I just mean, like, I think if you're on your way to 100, if you're on pace for 100, you know, we're talking about having 75 through three quarters, you're probably up 40 against a team that has no energy to come back. And then it's like, are you just going to spend the fourth quarter like allowing your player to go out there and just chuck freely to get 100? Maybe you are, and that's fine. But I think that would be, you would have to do it kind
of
shamefully.
Yeah, it runs the risk of having terrible optics. I didn't love the optics of the Rockets game, if I'm being honest. I think we talked about it on the pod. Like, you know, he kept gunning for it late. And the part of me that would like to see him just in a more competitive environment because of how great he is, you know, I find this angle interesting, but also a little bit depressing. Like, is this what we're doing in Portland these days? And I know it's just a conversation, so I shouldn't be too critical. But, you know, conversely, it is wild that he has become such a lethal scorer that, you know, a podcast like this would even entertain that idea. And to give a quick number, you know, beyond his 71-point game and let people know what he's been doing, and this is not a small sample size. In the last 23 games, Slater, Dame is averaging 38.9 points. Now Portland is 11-12. During that time, you know, he's kind of just doing what he has to do for them to stay afloat. But 38.9 over the course of more than a quarter of an NBA season is pretty monstrous.
Yeah, no, he's been insane. I mean, like, it's funny. I was at that Blazers-Warriors game last week, and the Warriors really aggressively, they blitzed him on pick and rolls, and they did a box and one. They had a, you know, which is very rare. It's becoming, I guess, a little bit more common, but just to completely get it out of his hands, he still scored 21 facing that type of defense. And I was going back to the box score because, you know, I'm writing about the scheme and getting the ball out of Lillard's hands, which did frustrate him. But, you know, you're going, and he like I said, I think he had, believe it was 21. And I'm like, man, 21, this is his lowest scoring game. I'm like scrolling down his game log, like, oh, this is like his lowest scoring game in the last 22 games or something like that. And, like, you know, 21 points is great.
It's not nothing, yeah.
So, I mean, I would just remember looking at the game log, like, man, this is insane. Some of the numbers he's been putting up on just like a nightly basis. And has really had to, you know, no Simons right now. He tried to come back from an ankle injury and then basically immediately had to go out again. So he doesn't have a ton of help offensively. And yeah, they're floundering a little bit. You know, I think they have a little bit of an opening here where I do think the Jazz are about to, like I said earlier, bow out, you know, a little bit purposefully here. So I think somebody can slip into the 10. I think the Pelicans are vulnerable at the 9. So maybe they could get into the 9-10 side of the play-in bracket. And, you know, it would be on the back of one of those Damian Lillard, you know, insane, you know, 2 month scoring binges.
Right. No doubt. All right, brother. Good stuff. We had a little cameo from Mr. Katz, who we thought we were going to miss this week, and a good, robust, lengthy Knicks conversation. All things association from there. Appreciate you. Appreciate the listeners. And we will talk to everybody next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.